You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Good evening. This is The Drew Marshall Show. Our first Halloween show ever, I think, actually. Or maybe we did one before and I poo-pooed the idea of Halloween. That was back when I was really spiritual.
I think the way calendars work, it literally will only have dates only fall on certain dates.
That's right.
Every 7 years.
That's
so
right.
You're probably exactly
so
right.
We're probably exactly right. So speaking of our Halloween show, we've got a great guest coming up here in a couple of moments, John Moorhead. He's a paranormal researcher. Got lots of great questions for him. But in the meantime, if you want to get some prizes today, like I don't know what they'll be, but we'll make sure they're good, you need to go to Twitter and find us on Twitter, okay? TDMS. That's The Drew Marshall Show, TDMS. And on our account there, we have posted a picture of what I look like today, dressed up in studio. I have an outfit on, a Halloween outfit. And anybody who calls in during the show and says, hey, I know what outfit you're wearing, I also need you to tell me what I'm holding in my hand. You see, because you could maybe guess, or maybe a friend told you what I was wearing today, a friend of a friend. And that would be cheating. And we all know where liars go and cheaters. So tell me what book I've got holding on to. Oops, I just said book, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
But not the title of the
book. Okay, you can figure it out from the picture. Go to Twitter, go to TDMS, and it's basically just a way for me to show off what I'm wearing today.
And it is lovely.
It is a lovely outfit. John Moorhead, paranormal researcher extraordinaire. Through commentary, interviews, and an application of his background in intercultural and religious studies, John explores the social, cultural, mythic, archetypal, imaginative, creative, and even spiritual aspects of the paranormal. The website that you may want to go to check all this stuff out is theofantastique.com. That's Theo, T-H-E-O, son of Bill Cosby. Fantastique, FANTASTIQUE.com. Hopefully that made a lot of sense. John, thanks for joining us. What's going on over in Utah today? Is it snowing in your neck of the woods?
Actually, it's not. I was a little worried. We had some cold rain and a little bit of snow a few days ago, but it looks like we're going to have a nice Halloween day and evening.
Nice, nice. What is a paranormal researcher? What does that mean? What do you do with all this stuff? Do you go to Halloween parties once a month and just have fun, or what do you do?
Well, I don't know that I've ever been called specifically a paranormal researcher before.
Well, I have now.
I'm a researcher in new religious movements. That includes a number of different groups, including a neo-paganism and New Age spirituality. Before I was a Christian and after becoming a Christian, I have been interested in these kinds of subcultures and also in paranormal phenomenon, whether it's ESP or psychokinesis and telekinesis and all of these things. I remember in the 1970s as a teenager watching a number of television programs that looked at this. So it's all
like ESPN?
Not exactly like ESPN, more like Leonard Nimoy and In Search Of and those kinds
of things. I remember
that. Those?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That stuff's always been of interest, and so I apply my academic research abilities to these kinds of phenomena and these subcultures.
Okay, I got to tell you my neighbor's story, and then I'm going to get your opinion on that. Are you ready?
Okay.
I was out chatting with my neighbor the other day. And, of course, around Halloween, I think we all get a little hypersensitive to this kind of stuff, and so these stories come out. And he says, by the way, do you know my house is haunted? There was no natural segue in the conversation whatsoever. It just kind of came out. Do you know my house is haunted? I said, no, tell me about that. So he said, well, old Mrs. Baker, or whatever her name is, used to live in the house, and we didn't think anything of it till there was a glimpse on a window, and someone would say, did you see that? And then there was another glimpse, another, did you see that? His brother was over and said, did you see that? And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I just thought I saw someone walk by the window. Oh, what were they wearing? And he described, this old lady shawl kind of stuff, which they had already noticed. They already knew what this lady dressed as. And so now his brother has seen this. And then the worst part of the story, or the weirdest part, is they have a little four-year-old boy who's very verbose. And he says to his dad one day, hey, did you see the lady that was just here? And they said, well, what are you talking about? Where was she? Oh, she was standing. See, before the occurrences were right by the window. The kid says, she was standing right by the wash basin right over here in the house. Really? Well, where did she go? And he says, follow me. And the kid goes to the bottom of the stairs and points up the stairs. Says, she walked up there. How do you explain that?
Well, the explanation is going to differ depending upon who you're talking to and what frame of reference they bring to the subject matter. People in Western culture and in all cultures have strange experiences, and based upon their cultural framework in interpreting these kinds of phenomena determines their response to it. In our culture, it's very popular with paranormal phenomena to respond to such things with reference to ghost stories or poltergeist, noisy ghosts that move things around and this kind of a thing. If you happen to be open to a spiritualist or psychic kind of worldview, then you're going to explain such things with reference to perhaps human beings who've died and have been trapped in this dimension and not able to move on to the next realm, and therefore that accounts for it. If you come from a skeptical background, as one of your later guests will, all this is simply the misinterpretation of natural phenomenon. If you come from some Christian traditions, it's going to be a manifestation of some kind of evil spiritual phenomenon. It depends upon what your framework is, how you interpret these kinds.
Okay, so how do you interpret it, John? I told you that story. What would you say to that fella?
Even though I would consider myself a conservative Christian, I, as an academic, someone who's read broadly in this kind of literature, I simply don't see good evidence for the legitimacy of some kind of psychic phenomenon going on in these kinds of experiences. I would say that it is a misinterpretation of some experiences that we can't understand, and our cultural fears come into play, and we interpret it as some kind of ghostly or paranormal phenomenon.
I did not understand what the heck you just said.
let me phrase it another way. I would say that people are having very real experiences that they cannot explain, that they don't understand.
Right.
And they're drawing upon whatever they may have in their religious or spiritual background.
No, I get what you're saying. You're saying is they'll explain it whatever their background leads them to explain. I get that. But how would you explain that to him? What would you say? Would you say, yeah, Mrs. Baker is a ghost that's been hanging around and you need to tell her to go away in the name of Jesus? Or would you say, well, it's probably a demonic spirit trying to distract you from any good Jesus stuff? Or would you say, well, maybe your kid got into the cocoa a little too much that night and heard you talking about Mrs. Baker and other stories, and he just made up the stuff himself?
Well, I try to be very pastoral and respectful of the person's experiences and fears and what they think they're experiencing, but I would say I simply don't think that anything sinister is going on here. I don't think there's anything to fear. If you want, seek out some pastoral counsel or what have you, some prayer to make you feel better about the experience, but I don't think there's anything sinister going on, and I would counsel along those kinds.
But was it Mrs. Baker, or was it an old lady ghost?
As I would interpret the phenomenon, I would say no, it's not.
So are there such a thing, are there ghosts?
I don't believe that there are, no.
So the whole, trapped, there's a few television shows these days about what's that one with the
Crossing Over?
Yeah, they don't know, though. There's a drama these days where this girl, she helps...
Ghost Whisperer.
Yeah,
Ghost Whisperer, yes.
That's right. She helps people pass over, get over,
right.
Get over into the other side kind of thing. There's no such thing as trapped spirits. I mean, aside from Catholic purgatory belief.
I don't believe that there are, but we have to keep in mind that a large percentage of our society believes in this, otherwise programs like that wouldn't be popular. One of the concerns I have in this area is we do have folks who claim to be able to see and to communicate and to hear from, to see spirits. In my view, I think that these people, no matter how sincere they are using more standard stage magician kinds of techniques in order to give the impression that they're in touch with those who've departed, and therefore they're passing on some problematic advice to people who are in a very emotionally vulnerable kind of position.
Can we talk to the dead?
I don't believe that we can, no. From a Christian perspective, even though the biblical material doesn't say a whole lot about what takes place after death, I think it's fairly clear that that no communication is possible between the living and the dead. A conservative, orthodox Christian perspective.
Okay, and that, of course, brings into the conversation the whole Witch of Endor scenario. So can we pull that apart a little bit? Let's set it up first. Maybe you can explain to our listeners the Witch of Endor scenario.
Well, in the Old Testament, if memory serves me correctly, I haven't looked at that in a while. I believe it's in 1 or 2 Samuel. One of the kings of Israel is seeking guidance, and the Lord is no longer speaking to him. He's no longer receiving divine guidance, so he turns to what some translations translate as a witch. Now, in that ancient Near Eastern context, it is not the same thing as contemporary neo-pagan witches. He's seeking someone out who claims to have the ability to speak to the deceased. And he goes and speaks to this woman, and the departed comes through and speaks to this witch and gives him spiritual wisdom, in fact pronounces judgment upon him and this type of thing. And it doesn't end well
right.
In that scenario. Now, the question is how to interpret it. Many times conservative evangelical theologians will interpret that as an instance in which God permitted the deceased to speak through this medium in order to communicate God's judgment. It's an obscure passage that is difficult to interpret, and it's dangerous to build a major teaching or doctrine or practice based upon those kinds of references in Scripture.
Okay, so if someone comes to you and says, I had an encounter with my dead grandpa, or I felt my dead grandpa's spirit, or I was encouraged by my dead grandpa or my dead mom or my dead, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
How do you respond to them?
I thankfully haven't had anybody come to me with those kinds of experiences, but
right.
theoretically, if I did, I would, again, try to be very pastoral. I appreciate that you feel that you're taking comfort from the fact that you think that your deceased loved one is coming and speaking to you. From a Christian perspective, we don't believe that such a thing is possible. In fact, there may be some spirits in some Christian traditions, particularly in conservative evangelicalism and the charismatic movement and so on. There is great emphasis upon the spiritual danger of those kinds of things. I would point out, though, that by counterpoint, I think that even in a conservative evangelicalism, we could give greater emphasis upon a sense of connectedness between the living and the dead. I think other religious traditions do that better. Other cultures, such as Mexico, with their Dia de los Muertos, their Day of the Dead celebration, where annually they commemorate and maintain some kind of connection between the living and the dead through this festival. We tend to do that very poorly in the West, including in Western Christianity. Even so, I think it's problematic for an individual to believe that they're actually communicating with a deceased loved one.
Okay. John Moorhead is on the show with us, and for all intents and purposes, he studies alternative religious movements, and also he's a paranormal guy. He really has studied a lot of the paranormal world. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
I'm going to have a psychic on my show later today. I'm surprised I haven't received a phone call from somebody telling me that I'm going to hell for doing that. But what would you warn me? What advice would you get? You know, some people have said to me, well, you better cover yourself in prayer, and you better get lots of people to pray for you, and da-da-da-da. I'm a believer in getting primary source material on the show. That's why I interviewed the High Priest of the Wiccan Church of Canada. That's why I interviewed Lord Egan, a former Satanist. Instead of just interviewing Christians who write stuff about people who believe other things, I want to interview people who believe other things. So would you give me any words of wisdom prior to the psychic coming on the show in about, an hour's time?
Well, I think it's great that you're having people who come from whatever topic it is that you're interested in going to the primary source material like you. I believe that many times Christians go to other Christians who have written books about other materials. They go to second and third hand material rather than the primary sources themselves. We don't need to fear these primary sources. If you want to know what a psychic believes and what they practice, the same thing with a neo-pagan or somebody from any other religion or spirituality, go to the source and talk to them. Now, if you want to take it to the next level and have a psychic reading, then some other issues and considerations come into play.
Explain that. So are you saying that Jesus people shouldn't be going to psychics and getting a reading?
I don't think so. I think we need to...
Hold on. You don't think... You have to explain your answer. You don't think that Christians should do that, or you think that there's no problem?
I don't think Christians should do that. I think we have within the Christian tradition, if we tap into it, a rich source for divine guidance. Christians are to receive guidance for their lives through the Holy Spirit as He speaks through Scripture, through prayer, through meditation, through other people. We have our own sources of divine guidance for our lives that we can tap into. Beyond that, especially within Western Protestantism, particularly in evangelicalism, there is a tradition of spiritual danger and warning about participating in such things. But I want to counterbalance that with a warning that also at the same time, one of my concerns about conservative evangelical Protestants is that our concept of the demonic and Satan is too big. In fact, so big that many times it diminishes the work of the Spirit in a person's life. So while I want to be careful and paint a holistic picture here, recognize we have divine guidance to tap into. There's also a tradition about spiritual dangers with such things. Let's be careful and not make our fear of the demonic and the satanic so big that it keeps us from doing like you're doing and having a psychic come in to go to the primary source to find out what these practices are all about.
Yeah, I need to apologize for a time in life where I was one of those ignorant, insecure Christians where we hid in the back room of our house on Halloween night as a family, turned off all the lights so that nobody would knock on our door, and we had nobody, we didn't have the pressure of kids coming or anything like, we didn't want, you know, and we just hid in the back of the house and watched, I don't know, a Focus on the Family movie or something. And, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there is this, and I think you and I touched on this in our conversation earlier this week, there's this bizarre sort of insular, insecure cultural phenomena amongst the Christian population whereby they seem to be so afraid of something that their God is not so afraid of.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
That makes sense. One of my concerns, going back to, I know earlier in the program you talked about these judgment houses where Christians create their own haunted house in order to scare people into confessing Christ. I have similar concerns. I think this is emotional manipulation. My broader concern is that we have this tendency in Christianity, instead of engaging the culture and incarnating the gospel and taking it with all of its messiness that pop culture is, we tend to grab parts of it or create our own subculture and then try to woo people into our reinterpretation of a pop cultural phenomenon. I just think it's a wholly problematic enterprise.
Okay, John, what should we be afraid of then? Because, I mean, here you're the paranormal guy, and you've been involved in researching and reading, and have you even maybe gone to some weird kind of wacky groups that maybe some Jesus people would look at you and go, really? Why would you do that? Isn't that exposing yourself to bad, evil things?
Well, I wouldn't call them weird and wacky groups, but I understand that many of my conservative Christian brethren would. I have been to New Age festivals in Australia. I've been to neo-pagan gatherings and all kinds of things, and I have frequent relationships with people in these various religious and spiritual subcultures. For me, I've gotten to the point in my spiritual life, in my maturity, where I don't fear these things or these people. I try to push myself beyond the boundaries of people and groups that many times for Christians we've turned into Christian boogeymen.
Right, right. Boy, you've just opened up a can of worms here, and I've got to go down these alleys quickly. If you fear it, they will come. I wonder, you know, if you really, in other words, the evil one or the enemy of God stuff, or however you want to label it, will only run after you if you're the only one running. In other words, when you're out on a hike and all of a sudden this nasty dog, or you're out for a run with a couple of, or you're a walk, I mean, with a couple of you and your wife, let's paint it like this. My wife and I were out for a walk one day when all of a sudden a scary, evil, barking, nasty looking dog came at us. And I stood and turned and faced the dog, ready to kick it in its head, and my wife ran. Where did the dog go? It chased my wife, which I thought was kind of funny, actually. But can we not take that and sort of parallel it to the spiritual realm?
I think so. Again, I want to make a point that I made earlier. I think our concept in Christianity of Satan and the demonic and spiritual evil is way too big. It's conspiratorial. I was reminded of this recently. A friend of mine, Scott Poole, wrote a great book, Satan in America, and he points out that frequently in the history of this country, we have demonized others in our culture and others using the figure of Satan. Our Satan is too big, and the presence of God is far too small.
Right, right. Okay, the next thing you brought up was, I wonder if we actually have someone in common that we know. Ross Clifford.
Yes, Ross is a good friend of mine in Australia. He helped give me a tour to one of the New Age festivals in Australia.
Did you go to the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival and watch them do their tarot card readings?
I have indeed.
How cool is that?
That is cool. That is very cool.
I took an alternative religious movements course with Ross at Moreland College when I used to live in Australia.
It's hard to find somebody better.
I know. But see, he's one of the guys that helped me breathe, because prior to that, man, I would get so spooked out by the New Agers, and they basically had more power than I did. And then Ross took a group of us to the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival, and here's, now folks, get this. Here's a group of Bible college students who open up a booth in the New Age Festival, and they do tarot card readings. And now, before you chuck a wobbly in this one, here's how they do this. They use the original deck of tarot cards, which has some unbelievably amazing biblical imagery on the cards. And they say right out front, we are not going to do a predictive reading, but we are going to explain to you the journey from life to death using the original deck of tarot cards. And when they use the imagery in the tarot cards, basically, they explain to them the entire gospel. using this imagery. There's a tree with a snake wrapped around it and a naked guy and a naked woman on it. There's the Adam and Eve card you can talk about. The Joker, the Fool card, is Christ, and he has snatched the rose from the Death card, and the rose was on the symbol of the skeleton riding the horse with the sickle, and he had a kind of an emblem on his chest that had a rose on it. And then, of course, here's this guy who looks like he's going to walk off the cliff. What a fool he is, and he's holding the rose. I mean, it is just amazing stuff that these guys, instead of running and being afraid of them, have said, no, you know what, the only way we are going to engage with these people is if we relationship with them. But others would look at that, John, and they would chastise them. They would say, you are to have nothing to do with them. How do you counter that?
Well, that's true. I've received the same criticism. In fact, it's not too hard to do some internet research and find Christians, well-meaning, who have misinterpreted my recommendation of the use of the tarot, as they're doing in Australia, by trained Christians, and they assume that I am advocating an occultic use of tarot cards. I think we just simply need to educate Christians who do take a different view and they tend to be fearful of such things, and say, look, we need to stop simply casting or cursing the darkness and instead spread the light. How can we engage and understand the people who are engaging in this new spiritual quest of our time? How can we engage them where they are in their lives and their spiritual quest, just as the Apostle Paul did in Acts 17 when he went and framed the gospel in the context of the pagan philosophers? It's the same kind of methodology.
John, have you ever been scared? I mean, just horrified scared, like scared, paranormal scared?
Yes.
Well, thanks for telling us that. What happened? What was it? What went down?
When I was a child, I had what one might call a paranormal experience. It's fairly common to be afraid of something in the closet, but in my instance as a child, it was something in my grandmother's closet. Whenever I would spend the night at her home, I remember seeing some kind of entity, feeling like I couldn't move and couldn't scream out. In looking at it as an adult, as a paranormal researcher, this is a common phenomenon across cultures. It has similarities to what's called the old hag phenomenon or UFO abduction scenarios, and basically what is probably going on...
Is that like a fear of marriage?
It can be. Be careful there if you're going to use the hag word. But basically what's probably going on is the person is between sleeping and wakefulness, and they aren't able to sort out the dreaming state from the waking. The fears come into play.
Right.
You can't move because the part of the brain that controls the movement of the body simply isn't working. And then you interpret that as some kind of paranormal phenomenon.
You know, recently, John, I was re-engaged with the fear of childhood that I hadn't felt in a long, long time. I grew up in a funeral home, okay? And I thought there was all sorts of spooky things going on, and I was also into horror magazines and Kiss concerts and any kind of horror flicks I could rent from the library. I was a kid that rented movies from the library. You did it too. Don't make fun of me. But I was walking to the cottage one night from the town, the little town where my cottage is, and it turned out to be an hour walk in the complete black. I mean, there was no moon whatsoever. There was no street lights walking down this road. It was complete black. And I had not done something like that in years. And my brain started to wig out, so much so that I went over to a tree and snapped off a huge branch and continued to walk with it so I had a weapon. I mean, here I am. I'm in my 40s. I'm a father of a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old, and I've been doing the Jesus stuff for, you know, well over 25 years, kind of thing, close to 30 years. And what do I got to be? I've got nothing to be afraid of, but the darkness messed with my head, John. What does that tell you about me?
Well, I mean, I don't think it just tells us something about you. It tells us something about what it means to be human. I mean, being fearful. And our culture informs us about what we're to be afraid of, and those kinds of things at certain times kick in, whether it's in the dark or watching a scary movie. And I think it's not something that we should deny. We should look at and embrace our fears in healthy ways just as much as we embrace our other emotional experiences.
Well, I still remember being just horrified. My biggest fear was I was going to step on roadkill that I couldn't see in front of me, you know, some dead skunk splattered all over the road. Well, let's finish maybe with this, John. I think you alluded to this earlier, but I just want to sort of encapsulate this. Don't we all just basically believe what we want to believe? In other words, if I believe God is talking to me, I'll be sure to interpret many coincidences just like that. And if I want to believe in ghosts, I'll interpret odd happenings as that. you know, what something is really paranormal. Here's a quote from some guy's blog. In fact, many religious beliefs sanctified by various Christian denominations would be considered taboo if it was done by a circle of Wiccans instead of a church full of believers. Thoughts?
Well, I think there's a certain level of truth to that. I mean, the sociologist Peter Berger talked about everybody has their own sacred canopy. That is their own plausibility structures in the ways in which they view the world. And what makes sense to you from a Christian perspective and the way you interpret it may be interpreted very differently by somebody from outside of your plausibility structure. This is a reminder to us as Christians that when we go to communicate our concerns about other people's practices, or to communicate the gospel message that makes sense to us in our sacred canopy, to recognize it's not going to necessarily make the same sense or be interpreted in the same way when you enter into somebody else's way of thinking. And that's why we as Christians in the post-Christendom Western world need to be sensitive to the idea of cross-cultural and cross-subcultural communication from your sacred canopy and perspective into somebody else.
John Moorhead, as labeled by this show, paranormal researcher. Of course, you're going to hang that title from now on. You got to. It's a cool title. Here's the website, www.theofantastique.com. Am I saying it right?
You are.
Explain that website concisely for our listeners, just so they may want to go and visit there.
Theofantastique was created as a means for me to explore on a popular and academic level the cultural, social, and religious implications of the fantastic and pop culture, whether it's film or television or art. So I look at all of these dimensions in a variety of ways through my own commentary and by interviewing other scholars and writers and filmmakers in the process.
Well said, John. It's been a pleasure to have you on. You're very well spoken. And would you do me a favor and say good day to Ross for me?
I sure will. Thank you for the opportunity.
He may not remember me, but, you know, tell him I was the very, very, incredibly good-looking Canadian guy that was in his class.
I'll tell him. I'm sure he'll remember.
All right. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. John Moorhead on the Drew Marshall Show, a paranormal researcher, basically. The guy has studied a lot of things that most of us just run away from. Like little scaredy cats. A short break on the show, and then when we come back, like this is a very short break, we're going to open up the phone lines for you folks. Do you have any comments about the interview we just did with John Moorhead? Are there things you're hearing on the show that you're not agreeing with that you think we need to heed your warnings? Or maybe you have some questions for our vampire scholar who's coming up at 3 o'clock. Do you have any questions you would like me to ask the world's leading vampire scholar? He'll join us at 3 o'clock here on the Drew Marshall Show. And you know what? Maybe you have some words of wisdom for me as it pertains to having the psychic join us around 3:30 here on the show. 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. We're only going to open up the phone lines for about 5 minutes, so get the calls in now. We'll line them up, and we'll take as many calls as we can. 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. We'll be right back.
Are you listening online yelling at your computer? Why? Give us a call and yell at Drew. Call 905-338-1250 or toll free on 1-877-JOY-1250.